whether we have a quorum.
Good morning, Chair, and everyone on the platform. Chair, we do create. We have 8 members. We may proceed.
Recording in progress.
Can I do the roll call, Chair?
Please do so.
Mr. Mumbiani?
Chairperson, thank you very much. Good morning. I'm available with a very bad network system.
Oh, but thank you for joining us, Honourable Member.
Chair, Ms. Prince Burns, Namaste, Chair.
Molo Slalo, Namalungu, Diko.
Good morning.
Chair, Ms. Mutahun.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues. I'm present.
Chair, Mr. Malamatia.
Morning.
Good morning, Chair. Morning, colleagues. I'm present, though I'm in the flight from now onwards in the flight, meaning that I might have a problem of participating fully. Thank you.
Thank you. Safe flight.
Chair, Mr. Cuthbert.
Morning, Chair. Please note that I do need to leave by about around 11 o'clock as I have a flight this afternoon. So my apologies.
Okay, let's hope that we can conclude our business by that time.
Chair, Mr. Mulder, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, all. I promise to keep it short so that Honourable Cuthbert can leave on time. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you for being so accommodating, Honourable Mulder.
Thank you, Mia.
Dr. Swaku, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members. I'm here. Thank you.
Chair, Mr. Prince, Chair.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, colleagues.
Chair, those are all the members currently on the platform. The others may still join us, Chair.
Thank you. Can we have the agenda, please? Thank you very much. There we have the agenda. Can I check whether there are any apologies?
Chair, there is no apologies currently, Chair. I hope the others will join us. And now, if there's an apology during the meeting, I will alert you to that, Chair. Thanks.
Thank you very much. So today we are receiving a briefing from the DTIC on its initiative to reduce red tape, as well as an update on the rollout of the provincial one-stop shops. And then we have some committee business. So can I have a move and a seconder for the adoption of the agenda, please?
Mr. Mbuyani, Chair.
Sorry, Chair. Before you adopt my chair.
Yes.
Chair. On the committee business, there is something I wanted to raise. Can I raise it there on committee business?
Yes, you must just submit it before.
Before.
I will allow you this time to.
Okay.
To table it there. Thank you.
Chair, we have Mr. Mbuyani, Mr. Dr. Prince Burns, Namaste, Chair.
Honourable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thanks once again. I propose that we adopt the agenda as reflected.
affected there.
And also,
Chair, I don't know the question of Mr. Nzako. Can you please give Mr. Nzako or Dr. Nzako a process of raising issues, because we cannot just have issues plugged there as a committee business. Committee business is scheduled in the program. So if there's any other item that they feel or needs us to discuss, can you talk to the secretariat before the agenda has been flighted? Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Bernd Ngamashe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. I second the proposal to adopt the agenda by Honorable Mbuyati.
Thank you very much.
Was affectionately called by the late Chairperson Mbuyati.
Yes, or as we know him, Happy Mbuyani. Okay, thank you so much. Committee Secretary, can I check who's doing the presentation on behalf of the department?
Chair, the delegation is led by the DDG, Ms. Chwani. She's leading the delegation today, Chair, and she will introduce the rest of the team.
Thank you very much. Over to you, Ms. Chwani.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, members, honorable members.
I see it's Chwani.
Chwani, yes.
Yes, my apologies. I put the T in front of it. Thank
It's pronounced like you say Chwani, but you say Chwani. Yeah, thanks, honorable Chair. I'm Sarah Chwani. I'm leading the delegation from the department, the DTIC. Chair, if you allow, I would like to also acknowledge the presence of my colleagues who are in the meeting, Chair. And they can introduce themselves. We will start with Eunice. Eunice, and we can go on, yes?
Good morning, Chair and honorable members. Eunice Hussain, Head of Investigation. Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning.
Yes, Malebo, are you in the... Yes, I saw Malebo. Are you introducing yourself from that side?
Well, thank you very much. Good morning, Chair and members. My name is Malebo Mabuti Thompson, Deputy Director General responsible for Industrial Finance. Thank you.
Eunice? Rather, Stephen? Yes?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. It's Stephen Hannibal. I'm the Chief Economist at the DTIC. Good morning.
Thank you. Evelyn?
Morning, Chair and Honourable Members. This is Dr. Evelyn Masoja, the DDG for the Consumer and Corporate Regulation Branch in the DTIC. Good morning. Thank you.
Good morning.
Morning. Nikki?
Good morning, Honourable Chair and Honourable Members. Nikki Krier, I'm the Chief Director at the Trade Policy Negotiations and Cooperation Branch.
Morning.
Thank you, Chair. Yes, go ahead.
Can I just check who is doing the presentation?
Yes, I'm doing the presentation, so I'll go ahead. Chair, I'm going to share. Are you going to share the screen or should I share from my side?
Okay, while you're sorting that out, can I just make some opening remarks? In its 2022-23 annual performance plan, the DTIC has identified the need to improve the ease of doing business and as such has endeavored to identify and reduce unnecessary red tape across its branches. The DTIC has also been rolling out provincial Invest SA one-stop shops to assist investors to navigate the regulatory requirements and resolve blockages during this process by providing access to all key government departments and entities under one roof. The committee had initially visited the Western Cape one-stop shop in 2019 and engaged on the concept there. However, there had still been several provincial one-stop shops in the process of being rolled out at that stage. So the committee will thus be receiving this briefing that we're going into now on the progress that has been made since 2019 in rolling out the one-stop shops, as well as the regulatory reforms that have been identified to improve the ease of doing business. You may proceed, Ms. Trani.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. Like you rightfully indicated, we will be covering those two areas, the progress on the rollout of stop shops in provincial, in our provinces, as well as how we as the DTI are reducing the red tape to ensure that we create an enabling environment for our mandate. We've got also Eunice, who's leading the work in terms of the one-stop shops, so he will also cover that part, and I will come in and really deal with the reduction of red tape. The presentation will cover basically just to confirm what is the problem really that we are addressing, and the progress on our the rollout of one-stop shops. We've also included some few slides to bring you up to speed with the support that we're giving on the energy, the alleviation of energy crisis in our country as well. And then we will go into the ease of doing business, which really is at the center of what we want to do in terms of ensuring that we're creating an enabling environment for investment, even for businesses, local businesses, whether it's internal or external, and also then how we have the regulatory reforms that we've put in place apart from just doing the areas of investment and so forth. And we'll touch on issues of export and so on. So we can go to the next slide. Hello? We can skip this. It's just for information. Maybe we go to the problem identification. Yes, next slide. The real issues, the root causes of what we are sitting with here really is the over-regulation that we find that impedes us people who are also coming to do business with us, stakeholders to come and do business with us, and even SMMEs and even foreign investments. The processes that we have that you would find that some of the processes really are not really value adding. They are just multiple processes, and also the protracted turnaround times that we have to address. All these root causes of over-regulation, unnecessary procedures, and convoluted processes and protracted turnaround times, they really create an administrative burden, which then, at the end of the day, doesn't really allow for us to move with speed, and not necessarily us per se, but the people who want to do business with us in the country, whether it's a small business, whether it's big business, whether it's foreign companies coming to do business with us. So that actually hampers the investments, the competitiveness of us, and also impedes us doing expanding our exports and of greatest importance, the inclusion of people who've been disadvantaged previously. So let's move on. So I'm going to hand over to Eunice so that he can cover then the progress on the rollout of one-stop shops in the provinces. Over to you, Eunice.
Thank you, Sarah. And once again, good morning, Chair and honorable members. I'll cover on this presentation's points 2, 3, and 4, which takes into the discussion on the one-stop shop approach, the discussion on the energy work stream, as well as the the ease of doing business. I'm glad certainly that many of the members did visit the Western Cape one-stop shop. So we have an understanding of the concept of the one-stop shop, which is basically a coordinated focal point that brings government departments and agencies together to make it a more seamless process for investors throughout their business life cycle in South Africa, dealing with issues of regulatory as well as administrative processes that can be fast-tracked and unblocked in a single facility, as well as serving as an advocacy a forum for investors in talking to the South African government. Next slide, please. So the one-stop shop, as I said, is basically, it deals with aspects, all aspects in business that are for registration, permits, and licensing. And what we try to do is from a policy level in the Ease of Doing Business program to improve that, as well as improve process and turnaround time, and then actually, when investors have these issues, either in visas or in environmental impact assessments or mining permits or incentive applications, we coordinate and we facilitate that in the one-stop-shop approach. In the provinces, we do that in partnership with provincial government, an investment agency or an economic development department. And the department, the province works with local government and the role players involved in a province. So basically, we work throughout the business or investment value chain, provide specialist advisory, coordinate across national, provincial, and local government, providing information as well as the business or investor roadmap in South Africa. Next slide. Basically, the one-stop shops are a facility to provide investors information on the economic environment, regulatory environment, legal environment, the compliances in South Africa, as well as to advise them on what kind of funding, support, partnerships, and to look at the investment guide. From A to Z for investors, and a whole range, which is just, this is just a snapshot of investor facilitations, particularly visas, company registration, environmental impact assessment, water usage licensing, municipal facilitation with agencies such as SARS, NRCA, SABS, zoning, and then to advise investors on locations, special economic zones, industrial park, facilitate critical infrastructure, be a point to advise together with our branches on black economic empowerment, as well as the industrial growth sectors that in terms of industrial policy. Next slide. So the approach we take is that the MEC writes to our minister to establish a one-stop shop approach and appoints a lead agency in the province, which then coordinates all the role players in the province, and we bring all national and entities together in a process to establish a one-stop shop. We provide a support in terms of infrastructure build for the one-stop shop, OneSoul, as well as then we provide together in partnership with the province investment marketing support to run the one-stop shop, and then work in a coordinated manner with capacity from national departments as well as agencies to unblock regulatory impediments in the country, but also to capacitate these one-stop shops and share global best practice with them in terms of a senior forum and a general manager's forum to get the one-stop shops seamlessly functioning. Thanks. Next slide. So in the province, once we established the framework, we worked together from national government departments. We bring them together, and the lead provincial agency will bring the provinces, the districts, and the metros together. So intergovernmentally, we will start the stakeholder management for the establishment of a one-stop shop. And that process does take time because of the capacity and of provinces, local government, as well as we also bring the capacity from national and government entities together in the one-stop shop. But key regulatory frontline departments are part of this one-stop shop approach. Next slide. Honourable members, besides the Western Cape one-stop shop, we have three others. The one-stop shop that is on the DTI campus, that's the national one. We have one in One Central Drive, which is the Gauteng one-stop shop, and one that works with that's the KZN one-stop shop. So we have four functional one-stop shops at present, and we can go on to the next slide. This year we very glad and pleased. We're working hard to complete three one-stop shops. That will be the Eastern Cape, Northern Cape, and Limpopo, and the pics in front of you will actually is the state of readiness. So we're very far down the line to get these three done, these time frames of November and January. Some of them may be done even before that, but these are the latest times that we would do them. And as you can see, the agency's leader is in Limpopo, and in the Northern Cape is the Northern Cape Economic Development Agency, and in the Eastern Cape, it's the Eastern Cape Development Agency in East London, ECDC. So these are the three that we will add within this year or early in the financial year of January to be completed. Next slide. I may just add that we are also working very closely with Mpumalanga. The MEGA is the agency. They have refurbished the what we call the MEGA precinct in terms of infrastructure. We are working very closely with them, and we think that one-stop shop would be able to be established early in the new financial year of next year, as well as the one in Free State. We've been working quite closely with them. And the last one-stop shop will be in the Northwest. We have started informal discussions with them, and we hope those three can be completed within early or latest by mid financial year of next year. Also linked to the provincial one-stop shops, we also have some satellite one-stop shops, because we do have special economic zones in the country, and some of the special economic zones also have customs control areas. So we have a satellite office, for example, in the Douwe Trade Port, with the branding of an Invest SA one-stop shop facility that serves the tenants of the zones in a one-stop shop, as well as we've been working with KZN provincial government in the outlying areas and districts how to establish satellite one-stop shops that can be linked to the provincial and national one-stop shops. So these are some of the approaches that we are working with provinces to get done. So we have a satellite one in Douwe, we have a satellite one in East London, and we will have a satellite one possibly in Kuka. Thank you. Next slide. Just to give honourable members some of the impact of the one-stop provincial ones, as you can see, this is some of the work that has been facilitated through the Gauteng one-stop shops. You can see they've been quite busy with the visa issue in terms of facilitating visas, but also areas of supporting companies in new projects and expansions, as well as doing investment marketing and investment promotion in attracting new investment to Gauteng. So beyond investor facilitation, there's a lot of work being done in investment promotion as well as investment marketing itself. Next slide. This is also some of the work that has been done in the Western Cape. Again, a lot of stakeholder management, dealing with a number of industry sectors, admissions, regulatory approvals. And the Western Cape has also done an e-online booking platform on linking the one-stop shop, as well as advertising the one-stop shop in a number of digital platforms, the services of the one-stop shop, and has facilitated many industry events, as well as inward missions during the past year. Next slide. Some of the work that has been done in the KZN one-stop shop, including a number of catalytic projects that we've been able to package and get ready for investment, as well as facilitation with environmental impact assessments, unblocking at the deeds office, dealing with investor inquiries, corporate engagements with the investors, working with DFIs in unlocking funding for particular smaller companies that has been facilitated by the KZN one-stop shop. Next slide. This is also some of the work that has been done by KZN, including discussions on Spruma and looking at developing projects and expanding the one-stop shop approach at the district level. Next slide. Next slide. Honourable members, what we are doing is that in response to the President's announcement on the energy climate reform of the country, we are participating as a one-stop shop in this respect in government, in the legal and regulatory work stream to establish and support this work led by the Presidency through a one-stop shop approach. So there are two things that are happening. One is there are a number of policy reforms in terms of improvement of the regulatory process from NERSA, from EIA, water usage license, the wheeling agreements and so forth. We are part of the regulatory work stream to improve those processes. And then secondly, we are assisting to use the expertise and the infrastructure of the one-stop shop approach at the national office, that we will offer these facilities working intergovernmentally together with the province at the local level to municipalities to assist in a more coordinated and a more seamless manner where applications are lodged for energy licenses and then permits. They can be fast-tracked through this one-stop approach led by InvestSA and specialists from government departments on these aspects are already part of our one-stop approach. So it's more about extending the service on energy applications. So we're currently working and today there's actually a meeting right now to discuss this and to see how best we assist the Presidency utilizing the facilities, the expertise, and the ability to run this more seamlessly in a more coordinated manner. Next slide. Thinking continue. What we've done as part of this one-stop shop approach and investment climate reform, we've done a number of work, as I said, from on the policy level in two aspects, in improving the policy, but process. an improving process. You would recall it was the World Bank program on the ease of doing business indicators. We worked in this with them, and this work is now culminated. But these are the results of the work that we've done on some of these indicators. And for example, in company registration, we took this to another level through the BIS portal program and automated and digitized the process. And in fact, we went beyond what the requirements for us on the starting of doing business. As you can see, the seven areas we added to the BIS portal, CIPC, company registration, SARS, printing private sector banks, compensation fund, UIF. We added Excel part where you can get your BBBE certificate and your ZAN domain name. So this is an automated digitized process, which was 40, which used to take 40 days before and 7 days. Today, it's just one step. It takes you 15 minutes as a domestic company to register a company on this portal for your mobile phone. And if you need to be then, if you have a name change and need to be verified, it takes about 3 to 4 hours and you're done at the cost of 125 rand, and if you include the desired domain name, it's 175 rand. So these are some of the things that we've been able to do over the past 2 years, which are now being rolled out, as now we are also moving on phase two in enhancing the BIS portal and the e-services programs of CIPC, in which we are adding foreign registration. Registrations of companies that will now work with the Department of Home Affairs and SARS itself, and we'll be able to do that seamlessly. But also for all citizens and investors, we're also going to make the process of your annual returns to CIPC online. That is, you can also then do your annual returns, you can do name change, you can do directorship changes online seamlessly at the press of a button. So these are some of the services that are being pioneered on digital transformation in the States that is a service for all citizens, investors and businesses operating in South Africa. Next slide. So what we did with the World Bank was that, and together with the National Treasury on the City Support Program, we had to work with the City of Johannesburg, which is the lead metro and the proxy, and we worked in three of these indicators that are coming up following this one. We looked at construction permits, and we did an online construction permit process and system. In the City of Johannesburg, there were four departments which required you to go to four different departments in the city. You need four different stamps. We did an online system, brought these two four government departments together. It used to take you 28 days, four different departments. It takes you 15 days to get this done. So these are some of the reforms that have been pioneered and done. As they are now been successfully been done in the City of Joburg, we can then now transform and assist other municipalities in the country to have this kind of service. Next slide. As the lead department, the DTIC, we established technical working groups on the ease of doing business program, together with government departments, entities, and SARS was the lead entity in the paying taxes work. And SARS is done through a risk engine system, adjustment system, has improved significantly in corporate income tax, value-added tax refunds. You can see previously it was 32 weeks for income tax. It's now 17 weeks. The value-added tax was 15 weeks. It's now 4 to 5 weeks. And the returns was 9 hours. It's now takes you 30 minutes. We're also working with SARS on a campaign to assist and capacitate SMMEs and smaller business on how to do their VAT returns and how to apply for them itself. So these are, again, when we talk about the digitization of the state. And then on registering of a property, again, with the City of Johannesburg, in terms of the registration of an e-clearance certificate, there was the conveyancing documents. Today, conveyances can register online. at the city of Johannesburg. So it removed, the long queues at Tuso House, and the cost for conveyancing has been reduced, as this is now an automated process. Next slide. Chairperson and honorable members, I just want to give you a snapshot, a highlight of some of the unblockings and the impact of the unblockings in terms of the work of the one-stop shops. This slide show what we have done for investors, foreign investors in the main, from permanent residency applications for companies to facilitation for products at the NRCS, to getting the GMP or manufacturing licenses with SAFRA, as well as in, for example, in Thai Summit, facilitating the energy requirements at the SONA Special Economic Zone for energy. Next slide. Again, some more of these different variety of across the board of services and unblockings required, for example, from the Department of Forestries, Fisheries and Environment for a no objection letter for buyer to what to go and get funding in terms of C2 and C-level funding for green projects. Facilitating the foreign registration with CIPC for YFPO and also for a hospitality project, getting the occupation certificate in the Jumia municipality in KZN, as well as talking to ESCOM to look at the outstanding payments for energy for a new investor in the country. Next slide. Honorable members, also what we serve across the board a variety of clients, and this is some of the interventions that we've done for Black industrialists, women-owned, youth-owned industrialists. For example, MCR Plastics got a contract with PW. They needed to have additional funding for 3 machines, as well as to get technical experts quickly in the country to commission the plant to serve the VW contract, and we did that quite seamlessly. And then there was delays in the property transfer duty from SARS. We facilitated that for the Toronto Group, as well as for K-Bio, which is a youth company, to is the first company that has got the SAFRA license to manufacture diagnostic kits, and facilitated that together with other government departments and looking at AfroZonke in the chemicals industry. They have now expanded, facilitated funding for them, as well as to look into the supply chain of how they can supply Unilever. And then Evo Health, for example, looking at expansion, a new site funding, and getting a pharmaceutical license for them. This is just a brief snapshot of some of the work that goes through or passes the one-stop shops, either nationally or from the province, and that we work intergovernmentally to fast-track and unblock. We're now working very closely with the presidency on the red tape program and the energy work stream to establish one-stop shop approach and to establish a new comprehensive ease of doing business program for the country, which we will lead together with the red tape reduction unit of the presidency. Next slide. That's it for me. Over to you, Sarah.
Okay. No, thank you, Eunice. Thank you, Honorable Chair. So I will be taking you through the last part of the presentation and really focusing on other reforms or measures that we've taken to reduce red tape in our other programs, in addition to what Eunice has talked to mainly. So the first area is about expanding exports. We've looked at our scheme, the MES scheme, the investment assistant scheme that we have, and we've noted that it's one of the impediments in terms of currently we are supporting SMMEs and not making room for large companies to participate, and also to ensure that we maximize state visits where we can actually also ensure that we use those opportunities to take more companies to be able to participate and do their exhibitions as we do those state visits. The other part is, excuse me, it's around the automation of the insurance process of companies, obviously, that wants to participate abroad in terms of doing business abroad. So we've got this with ECIC, the export credit insurance company that is helping us in that regard. So we've automated the system so that it becomes a seamless and process and it's timeless in terms of reducing having to fill forms and so forth. Next slide, Tulu. This slide really talks to indicate the impact in terms of how we supported Black industrialist women and youth-owned businesses in terms of EMEA funding. You would know that we supported 63 companies, FA companies, and of which those are 40 are Black-owned. And 14 women owned. And also in terms of our mentoring program, we've provided support on this program for 29 companies, 22 of which are Black owned and 15 are women owned and one is youth owned. Next slide, thank you. In terms of export awareness, we had seven sessions conducted seven sessions for 189 individuals, which included 168 Black individuals, 110 women, and 59 youth. And we've given you also the spread so that you can see in terms of the spread in terms of the various provinces. So in Joburg, we had 19 participants, in Durban, 14 rather, and in Roodepoort, we had 33 participants, Upington 14, Tzaneen 10, Polokwane 82, and Jane First 17. Next slide. This slide talks to our how the industrial financing work in terms of us providing incentives to companies and those who want to go into business. We've automated the system, the online incentive system, and that takes away really the administrative burden of having to fill forms. So it's an electronic system. So all documents are now, instead of having to be filed physically as it were, now we've got them in one single repository, and the system also affords an interface as you complete your forms. So we've given you that those pictures, they will come in the next slide so that you members, honourable members, and check and see have a feel of what the system looks like. So it gives guidance in terms of what is it that they need to complete and so forth. But also the stakeholders can actually track even their applications, and also we get management information from this so that we can see how many applications are at which stage and so forth. Next slide, Tulu. So this is just a screen print of the system, what we use. So it will provide all those modules, as it were, or processes that the applicants would want to engage on. Moving on. And this is also a slide just giving you a flavor in terms of the information that is required and the ease of just being able to capture the information. Next slide. This slide is a little bit busy, but we wanted to show you the management information that we get because of an online system and a database that helps us then to be able to get management information to see the processes in terms of throughout the value chain of applying for an incentive, where's the application and how far, and even the spread. You can see we've got also we're indicating there in terms of this the provincial spread, so which really helps us also in terms of reporting. We are providing it talks to the work that is done by the Competition Commission with regards to measures, and they have to all their work obviously is to assess measures, and they categorize their measures in terms of they would have this the big business and small companies, and in that also you have what we call non-complex. Complex matters or complex measures, and very complex or small or intermediate, and very, very large complex matters. Now, just to take you through this graph, this bar chart, where the blue actually indicates the turnaround times in days that have been stipulated by the Competition Act. For instance, if you look at non-complex matters, the Act requires that you take the Competition Commission takes 60 days to assess those measures. So what the Commission has done is that they have put a standard of 20. So you'll see the reddish one, the reddish bar there, and the green one is the actual average. So you would know that the Commission is actually performing very well below the standard, or rather the turnaround time stipulated by the Act, and also the standard that they have set for themselves. And this is also applicable for the complex matters. In the second column, you'll see this, the Act says 60 days, they've set a standard of 45 days, and so the actual average is 40 days. And so it goes for the very complex matters, although obviously there you can see that the actual average of 57 is close to the standard, as well as the turnaround for stipulated by the Act. And basically it's because of now the complexities of matters that they have to deal with in terms of the measures. And the very large ones, and I think that's where you would see now that the picture is actually different from what we've just seen now, that the Act stipulate 55 days, and because of what they have actually experienced is that they have had to come up with a standard of 120 because the 55 was not really achievable, and you can still see then that even now, because of the very complexity, the intensive complexity of this, is that they have had to, the actual average actually is 137. So they are not really meeting the standards. But in all the other areas of non-complex, complex, very complex, that is your small and intermediate companies, they are performing well below the set standard. Next slide. And they are also busy with, I think, the Competition Tribunal. They are also looking at how they can automate some of their processes online, and also the Competition Commission is also looking at the rules as well to say how they can also do away with some of the over regulation that's in the rules, and we're targeting for budgeting in this month. Next slide. That is the end, Chair. That's where we would end with our presentation. Thank you very much for affording us this opportunity.
Thank you very much, Team DTIC. Portfolio Committee members, there's the presentation for your interaction. Can we have an indication of hands? Honorable Sering. Any other hands? We'll proceed with you for now, Honorable Sring. We'll check later for other hands. Proceed.
No, thank you, Chair. Chair, I think firstly, just an appreciation for the presentation that was made. And so we want to say thank you to those who presented on what I believe is a very important concept in terms of turning around times, one-stop shops, ease of doing business, and growing the economy in South Africa. Firstly, maybe let me also just say, just to assist us, it's important also when you have graphs like the last bar graph that was shown, where the axis is actually labeled, particularly the vertical axis. Because one then has to try to figure out whether this is seconds, hours, days, years. But only during the presentation, we hear that it's actually the number of days. But if it's actually labeled on the graph itself, it makes it easier for the reader to identify exactly what is being portrayed on the graph. So that's just the first thing. The second thing, Chair, would be with regards to about 8 to 10 years ago, I visited Rwanda, Burundi area around the Great Lakes. In Rwanda, this is about 10 years ago when we were there, they had already initiated one-stop shops, and the economy was seeing an uptick because of those one-stop shops and the ease of doing business in Rwanda to one day. You could get your business registered in Rwanda in a day. This was about 8 to 10 years ago. So my question would be, why has it taken South Africa, which was at the time the largest economy on the continent? I'm not sure, the last I checked, we were number two behind Nigeria. I don't know whether we've slipped further or overtaken Nigeria. But the largest economy on the continent, and yet we had a country like Rwanda, a tiny country, probably just about 5 to 6 million people. And yet they were able to introduce one-stop shops. This is, I'm talking about some 10 years ago already, and maybe, so it could actually have been 12 years because it was 10 years or so that I was there. So why has it taken us so long to actually catch up? So that's the first question. Second question is, we were supposed to have had these one-stop shops going a few years ago. I can't remember the exact date. But we are now in 2022, at least from 2019 or so, 2020, this was being mooted by the president. And now 2022, and we only have three one-stop shops in the three major provinces, KwaZulu-Natal, Western Cape, Gauteng. And while I appreciate that within the next 6 months or so, we're going to have another three, but again, it is still going at a slow pace. And this is clearly, if we want to see what the challenges of South Africa is facing economically, our high debt to GDP, high unemployment and so on, if we want to see turnarounds, low growth in terms of GDP growth, and if we want to see a turnaround in South Africa, we have to be able to expedite the processes. And in my view, Chair, it is still too slow. The second question then is around progress in terms of energy, sufficient energy with regards to businesses that are applying. And obviously businesses rely on a steady stream of energy. And if we don't have that, we're going to be losing businesses to other countries. I did read also that Rwanda has actually overtaken South Africa as a more favored African investment destination. So South Africa is losing ground to smaller economies purely because of either we're moving too slow or because of our policy uncertainty as well. And that's another issue. How do we inform and assure investors, of policy certainty in South Africa? So, Chi, I think that those are Those are just some of my questions. I look forward to the answers from the presenters. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Honorable Motau.
Thanks, Chair, for the opportunity. Chair One, I support the previous speaker on the challenge of the slow pace of setting up the one-stop shops in other provinces. And then my second question will be, what challenges has the InvestSA encountered in setting up one-stop shops in other provinces? And how are they resolving this challenge? Secondly, what regulatory and legislative reform has the InvestSA identified to improve the work of the one-stop shops in an effort to easy the doing of businesses? Lastly, Chair, what is the relationship between the red tape reduction office in the presidency and InvestSA? Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honorable Motau. Honorable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. Look, this has been spoken about for the last 8 years. It's sexy to say reducing red tape. It's sexy to use the words ease of doing business. And the truth is that none of the talk, none of the tours, none of the money, none of the effort has actually resulted in any material or meaningful difference. So much so that actually the president was forced to take the responsibility of red tape reduction away from the DTR because they either simply refused or were just incapable of actually cutting red tape. Now, in 2019, the president made a lot of song and dance in the Sona about advancing up the ease of doing business report from the World Bank. And then in 2018 and 2019, South Africa was at 82. Now, the World Bank discontinued the ease of doing business report last year, but at that time, we had actually regressed to 84. So all of the discussion, all of the pomp, all of the ceremony, all of the chest beating had actually seen a regression. And that's the truth as to why the president got sick and tired of the department's unwillingness to remove red tape, because the Department of Trade and Industry and the minister sees their job as to actually put more red tape in front of people's businesses and to control more of the economy and to control more sectors. And that's why the president had to act in the manner in which he did. So, you know, the fact that there's only three one-stop shops is exactly symptomatic of what we've seen over the last 8 years, and more specifically, the last 3 years. And don't take my word for it, because in the City Press last week, or the week before that, the chair of the French Foreign Trade Advisors had lamented the fact that France has more than 50 billion rand in investment in South Africa, and yet they've been waiting for 7 months for visas to get, visas for French nationals that work in these businesses. So, you know, we can talk about one-stop shops, we can talk about ease of doing business, red tape, but if you cannot even grant visas to people who have 50 billion rand invested in South Africa, what chance does any small business have of cutting it or making it? And what exactly does this one-stop shop red tape reduction unit in the DTR actually do if they cannot even get the Department of Home Affairs to issue a visa to people who have 50 billion rand invested in our country? And so quite frankly, I'm not buying the presentation that's put before us. I think it's just, you know, smoke and mirrors. And quite frankly, I don't actually know what this department or what is actually done anymore by the department, because there's actually just very little, if anything, to actually show for it. And, you know, maybe the committee actually needs to have a long consideration whether there's even any value in this department, if in fact it's been taken over by the presidency, because even the president knows that the department doesn't achieve anything. And, you know, we either have to be pro-business, pro-jobs, pro-investment, or we have to be pro-red tape, pro-control, and pro-interference. Those are the only two jobs. And from the amount of time that I've been here, and from what I see and what I read, I just don't believe that there's any seriousness. And in fact, I actually think that the department uses red tape as a barrier for investment deliberately in an attempt to frustrate people into the belief that, well, if they don't provide visas, that they'll employ someone locally, or, you know, if they can't bring something in, they'll manufacture it locally. That's what we use red tape for. We use it as a non-tariff barrier for investment or whatever local means we think we can do it for. And that's why the president had to intervene. And I think we must call out the department, and we must call out those officials for actually the unwillingness and inability to actually get the job done, because that's certainly what it looks like from here. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Honourable McPherson. Honourable Burns, Mamashi.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chairperson, members of the Portfolio Committee, and presenters. Maybe, Chair, the first thing to do is to appreciate the approach of the department and welcome the report as it seems to seek to coordinate and integrate all relevant systems that will make it easy to make business in South Africa. I think it's a very important transformational imperative, which is of course in line with the notion, among others, you know, of district development model, you know, syndication of resources, syndication of services, so that at the end of the day, any investor, any entrepreneur doesn't have to go around wasting time, wasting resources, looking out for services that are split all over. I think this is a very good model which we should all of us support, because it makes it easy for all the role players, our citizens, our investors, and it's going to change the face of investment opportunities within South Africa. And perhaps, Chair, we yes, of course, we appreciate the fact that there will always, Chair, there will always be prophets of doom. who at every effort that is being carried out by government, they would have no other input other than finding every reason to tear it apart. And you must know, Chair, you know, if I can use a analogy of a car, there are two things, Chair. It is either if the car is moving, the reaction of the dogs would be to bark at the car because it is moving. If it is not moving, the reaction of a dog, it's a very simple logic. Any you can look around. What it will do, it will urinate at the car. So it's either it barks or urinates at the car. So those are the two reactions that you will find from a dog. So that's what I'm trying to say, is that the work that is being done by the department, if the department is doing the right thing, obviously it will trigger reaction because the department is moving. Equally, if the department is not doing something, again, it will trigger a reaction as the dog would urinate at a car that is not moving. So I want to encourage the department not only to make these presentations to look glossy for the portfolio committee, but this valuable information, how does it find expression to local people, local communities, especially in the rural hinterlands, where primary production largely is happening, especially in the agricultural sector? Yes, it's important to have these one-stop shops at urban centers, because that's where most people would actually have access, would come there. But I want to encourage that in rural areas, you've got ward councillors. You've got traditional councils with secretaries. Each traditional councillor, it has got secretary. And that information must find itself there. You've got CDWs. Those community development workers must have this information. It must be at the fingertips. You know, the PCOs must have this information, you know, so that citizens have access. MPs, MPLs, councillors, traditional leaders, all public office bearers, they must make sure that they take it upon themselves to preach the gospel so that our people have access to information. With information, will empower them, you know, so that the notion of an inclusive economy becomes a reality, you know, because ultimately, Chair, we want to make sure that it's not only about local business, but it must be about and also give full appreciation to the region as well as the continent, because that's how
we will also coordinate the network to make sure that if you want to do business in the region, you want to do business in the continent, these one-stop shops must also have the ability to facilitate that kind of export business opportunities. So from where I'm sitting, Chair, I think the department is doing the right thing, and we want to make sure that the department accelerates its pace so as to ensure that more and more citizens have access to this valuable information. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mbuyani.
Chairperson, thank you very much for the opportunity. Let me first welcome this presentation. Yeah, it looks glossy, as my former colleague has indicated. And my challenge in this presentation, Chairperson, is that it seems as if the DTIC is only servicing the metro and the metro district in terms of the one-stop shop. We having 6 rural provinces in South Africa, and nothing is happening in terms of the one-stop shop. I just want to check what is their program to develop all this one-stop shop in all the provinces which are rural, because now they need the same services that has been given to Gauteng. And moreover, Chairperson, this one-stop shop can be able to assist the rural masses for them to form part of the value chain in terms of the economy. But seemingly this is the representation that we once had, and nothing has changed since we met, because all these four as the one-stop shop has been there for quite some time. There's nothing new. We are just told that they are establishing them. They will establish one in KZN, I mean in Free State and in Mpumalanga. But seemingly, I think the department must do more in terms of establishing those one-stop shop in the rural province. You can name it. If any program, like industries programs, they are in Gauteng. SEZ, they are in Gauteng. There's nothing in our rural provinces that the people are benefiting from the department. I pledge the department, Chairperson, through you to say, let them tell us exactly what is their focus, so that we understand that the rural provinces or rural masses, they are on their own. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Honorable Dr. Tswaku.
Thank you very much, Chote Kingiabonga. I wanted to check, am I audible?
You are audible, proceed.
Okay. Question number one. I wanted to check, they said 120 billion jobs that are in the pipeline are being facilitated. What does that mean? When you say 120 billion jobs that are on the pipeline, you have facilitated them. What does that mean? Have those jobs been realized? Or what is happening there? That's question number one. I hope someone is writing this question, because sometimes I ask questions and they don't get responded to. But I have to come back for a second bite. I'm trying to be very clear as possible. And then number two, why is a report used as a key performance indicator? What is so important about the report as a key performance indicator? Should not the key performance indicator as something tangible or a service delivery? I don't want to, yes, you can do a research and get a report for you to make a decision. But why is a report being made as a key performance indicator and an expenditure for that matter? Could it not been used for a tangible program, for a tangible thing that will probably deliver jobs? And then the other one is a write down that question will be to say, who drafts this report? Is it internal capacity, or are you using are you using consultants? If you are using consultants, how much money have you used on consultants? And if you are using consultants also, are you not thinking of building an internal capacity to be able to do a report for you or trend so that you are able to make a decision and redirect that money you are using for consultants to create jobs? Now, you said there are four reports on pledged investments, if I heard you properly. There are reports on pledged investments. So of the investments that have been pledged, how many jobs or how many projects that have been realized? So out of the pledges, you're saying that they've issued four reports on pledged investments. And how many jobs that or projects that from those pledges that they've actually been realized? You say that there are 24 investor issues that were sorted out, if I heard you properly, 24 investor issues. What were those 24 investor issues? Can you name them so that I know or we know what are those issues? And then, all right. Now, I wanted to ask on the since the establishment of the so-called Invest SA, of course, I probably join some of my colleagues because I've been trying to check why the presentation. Why do you want to tell us on something that you are busy doing? What is, maybe I can ask a question, what was the reason for the presentation, actually? Would you not be proper if maybe you would have came and said, I've done with the implementation of the so-called one-stops, and this is the result? Because you came to this committee to tell us about your failures. You failed to do 1, 2, 3, and 4. Would you not have probably came, maybe you could have even written a report. You failed to open these so-called one-stop shops on the other areas. You prioritize metros, as my colleague said. So I'm trying to, I was reading your presentation, that what did you seek to really achieve by coming to the committee and tell us about this one-stop shop? So maybe you will tell her. And then another question will be, say, on the Invest SA, how much, since your establishment, how much foreign direct investment that has increased, contributed by the establishment of these red tape centers? So what I'm meaning to say is, can you now put this thing into monetary terms? Is there a benefit? In monetary terms, not you had people coming to you and ask questions. I can just send a couple of people there, ask questions, and wow. For me, I don't know. I don't see that as really a success. What in monetary terms you could say that after your inception, we have given you so much billion or so much millions, And because of you, you've managed to double the investment that we have given you. So what is our return on investment? Are we investing properly on this thing? Did we get our value for money for giving you to establish the so-called Invest SA or a red tape one-stop shop? Have you done that calculation? If not, when are you going to do it? Because we need to get a value for money and see if this is working or is not working at all. So we need to get that. And also, because of your establishment, because you've got this Invest SA and you've stopped the red tape, what is the contribution on GDP of your cutting of the red tape? Is it, can you see it? Have you done any trends? Do we have the trends available? And then the next one will be on the, you said you advise on tax incentives and land in incentives. What are those incentives that you are advising on? Would you have considered maybe to lease the land and don't let the investors buy our land? And when you say you are doing tax incentives, are you cutting those things there? I think the last one, Chair, very, very last one for me, very last one, because I need to check this thing and ensure that it's done. On the starting of a new business, you're saying that what you came up with the one-stop shop on starting up the whole business. But that system has been there almost 12 years ago. The issue of registration of company online, online application of SARS, compensation, and all that was there most probably about in 2012, 2011 already. Then why are you taking a credit on it? Says that because of this one-stop shop, you managed to put this online and pull them together because people have been registering their companies and getting BEs online. So how is it possible that from the inception, or you claim that for the inception of Invest SA, you've managed to do that? Is it true? Thank you very much, Chair. That's the Chair, this is what happens when you prepare, when someone prepares for the meeting.
Oh, I see you are giving us a master class in preparation for the meeting. Very well done, Dr. Tswaku. I just want to remind you, though, that in my introductory remarks, we spoke about the fact that we went to the Western Cape one-stop shop and that in 2019, and that we were now looking at progress, of course, and challenges in the presentations. But given that that investment in South Africa, the ease of doing business is important for investment in South Africa. The work that Invest SA is supposed to be doing is very important to make sure that we continue to encourage investment into our country, because it creates jobs and there are lots of advantages. So I just have two very basic questions. I just wanted to check, what is the relationship between Invest SA and then the unit that's there, the red tape reduction unit in the presidency? And then also, if you had to summarize the biggest challenges that you face, especially in the rollout, I think that is what members are very concerned about, that the slow pace of roll out of one-stop shops. What are the biggest challenges that you can share with the committee today? But let me hand over to the team to answer the questions raised by members of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Thank you, Tim. Yes, thank you, Chair. Thank you, Honourable Members. We welcome and appreciate the questions, the comments, because it really helps us that we go back and really start looking at how we can improve on that. Most of the questions, as you'd have noted, Chair, members, Honourable Members and Chair, that they actually focus on the ease of doing business. The one-stop shop. So I'm going to ask Eunice to respond to that. Just only the question around the bar graphs on registering that we didn't name the vertical axis. It's a fair comment. We appreciate that. And then I think going forward, we'll just improve our quality assurance going forward. And honorable some of the questions around jobs and reporting reporters' key performance indicators, I was not too sure whether they are coming from this presentation or do they relate to another report. But so those that we cannot respond to, Chair, if you allow some of the questions that have been raised, we will then be in a position to respond to them, maybe in writing. But without having limiting a unit, I will hand over to him to respond. Thank you, Chair. Eunice?
Is still saying?
Eunice?
Thank you, okay. Chair. Chair, I think there's quite a few questions which are quite interrelated. So maybe I can maybe see how best we can answer them. And as my colleague has said, I think there are a few questions that were asked that are not part of this presentation. So we can deal with that separately. I think from our side, yes, more can be done quicker and faster. I think that the issues that the cost-cutting issues that members have asked is the I think relates to the challenge in terms of the rollout of the one-stop shop. And firstly, the one-stop shop itself. The one-stop shop is an investor center. I think that's the beginning point. It's an investor center. We are working with provinces like KZN to look at to roll out into districts in which that local government and province works with us and us as providing advisory and capacity. But essentially the ones that we are doing, we do, as investors say, those are purely for investors, both domestic and foreign. I think that from the work that has been done, the challenge is in a few areas. One is that there is a capacity issue both at national, because the one-stop shop is not only about DTIC or InvestSA. It's about bringing the rest of government together, meaning different government departments. So there's a capacity issue, and there's a bigger capacity issue at provincial and local level. Secondly, there is autonomy between national, provincial and local. That also can be a problematic issue in terms of regulatory and policy issues. And thirdly, I think the biggest challenge of what I found out is that in provinces, the capacity when you're dealing with an agency, an IPA or an economic development agency, there's a very high turnover of CEOs. You work with a CEO for 3 months and then the CEO leaves and there's a vacancy, another 6 months, somebody comes and in no matter of time, that person leaves. So it does hamper the rollout to a major extent, because for us, the major challenge in province is that we find is the governance framework weak, and it becomes very problematic when the governance framework and reporting structures are weak to implement and roll out these one-stop shops. I think what I would just want to say is that I do know that, and I work very closely on this World Bank ease of doing business indicator. It was quite a difficult task to get South Africa going, and we did get going. It's rather unfortunate that that the World Bank, the last report of 21-22, that didn't get released because of abnormalities in the World Bank itself. But I can tell you that the four indicators that we worked on, starting with doing business, construction permit, paying taxes, registering a property, South Africa would have made a significant dent in those rankings had that World Bank report been released, particularly in starting of doing business, because what happened is that we reduced the number of steps. And this also goes to the question of the last speaker. Yes, these things were on, or could be online. What we did is we brought the systems together, SARS, CIPC, your banks together, integrated the IT system. So it speaks to one, you can do one application at one time. So you reduce procedures and you reduce steps, making it one step. And had the report been released, working very closely with the colleagues from the World Bank, we could have been in the top 10 on that particular ranking. So it's rather unfortunate that that report got discontinued. But be that as it may, I think we can, the modalities in the technical working groups, we can then now accelerate this work throughout the state, because it was just for the other rankings, it was just done with the city of Johannesburg as the proxy. We can then replicate that work and accelerate that work throughout the state. And the relationship we have with the red tape unit, so it's two. It's one is that we work very closely with Operation Bullying Leather and now with the red tape unit. The red tape unit has been established, and the work that we're doing is that we are continuing to do the work that we do on the practically for investors and business on any issue of unblocking, fast-tracking and reducing red tape in government, and they working a number of aspects in a policy area that can be done. Now, one of the questions was what did we achieve, for example? When I do hear the sentiments that have been said, and I do certainly do agree, I think the visa issue was a sore thumb. But what did we do? Firstly, the visa is not a DTIC mandate. It's a Department of Home Affairs mandate. We play a facilitating role intergovernmentally, also together with the Department of Labor. So what we did is that we established a technical task team with the DG. And we advocated this together with the presidency. And you see, as of yesterday, the home affairs process of having visa centralized to headquarters in the last 8 months, this debacle of visas not being, this thing has now been changed. It's now gone back to the decentralized process where visas will now be processed at home affairs. It's the advocacy work that we've done together with other government, like the presidency, that got home affairs to really take a look and change their mind, and now hopefully things will be better. At the same time, we took the French CEO to meet the DG of home affairs to get this process sorted out for them. And for example, the Germans and the Japanese. As of yesterday, I actually worked intergovernmentally with our ambassador in Japan to say we need to clear out this backlog of Japanese visas. And by this week, we'll be clearing out the Japanese visas. So that is the kind of input and role and facilitating role we play. Although the mandate of this particular visa issue is solely and squarely in the Department of Home Affairs. So I think that from our side, certainly we can ramp up, and we can have what we do need as a country is we do need a very, very comprehensive ease of doing business program. Remember these one-stop shops, they work, they must be investors coming to the country to service, So you must also first have your policy levers working, and in this case, you must also have your back office working. For example, if we digitize the starting of doing business with CIPC on the first portal, if the automation process works with CIPC, but if the back office doesn't work at UIF and compensation fund, the system doesn't work. So it has to be capacity and continuous improvement and service delivery has to be part of that product and improvement. So you don't improve things for one day. It has to be continuous. So these are some of the challenges we do face. I think for us, a number of issues out this thing, the rollout got hampered. And as I mentioned, particularly the issues of capacity, the governance framework, the last 2 years of COVID. But certainly we're very keen to put this the three in within this year or early January in the Northern Cape, in East London, as well as the third one. In Limpopo, and very quickly do the other three in starting from the Free State, Mpumalanga, and the last one in the northwest. So our one-stop shops work for investors that are linked to also, as I said, in the districts. We will see how we open satellite offices as well as in the district municipalities.
Recording in progress.
To issues of questions that I think possibly we can respond to them in other people. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any further responses, Ms. Trani?
I think from our side, that would be all that I've indicated. Some of the questions that we received were not really relating to this presentation, so it would be difficult for us to respond to them. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. I would just ask the Secretariat to just check for us whether all questions have been answered. If not, if all questions related to the presentation, if there are any outstanding matters that we then get them in writing. So thank you very much. So we now move on to committee business, if I'm correct, in terms of the agenda.
Rick, you are correct.
Okay, let me just find my document. If you can just give me a minute.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you to Team DTIC.
Thank you, Chair. Yes. And thank you, Honourable Members.
Thank you very much. So in terms of committee business, as part of capacity building, the committee has agreed to have a workshop on industrial policy related matters. Training, amongst others, will focus on the following: factors driving industrial development, productivity and competitiveness, national industrial policy within the context of regional and continental development and integration, instruments of industrial policy such as the use of import tariffs and other trade measures, as well as the promotion of localization, and then lastly the role of the value chains and beneficiation in economic development. So we are submitting the terms of reference or maybe the scope so that we can afford members an opportunity to input and for members to submit names of experts that we could procure to lead the workshop. for consideration by MANCOM. And then given the short time frame, because remember this has been brought forward on our program, we are requesting that those names of experts that we must consider for doing, facilitating the workshop must be submitted by the 7th of September for the committee's consideration. Thank you. Can I hand over to committee members to see whether anybody wants to input? But you also do have an opportunity to submit those names by the 7th. But if you want to input on the scope. Ms. Sheldon, if you want to maybe take us through what I haven't covered. I see the hand of Honorable Dr. Tswaku.
I wanted to know, Chair, this is gonna be it's a workshop, and then thanks for asking us to forward names of the people that will come and do presentation. Probably I can suggest that maybe let us bring experts from different schools of thought. I think you can say on the left side, center, and the right side. And we are able to get views across all, you know, the spectrums. I think that maybe when you're making your selection, let us hear all views from different ideological, you know, thing. So that would also be the suggestion. And then I wanted to check, is there a possibility that this workshop can be done physically? I think when I read this thing, it was done on a virtual platform. Is there a possibility that maybe we can meet physically? Thanks.
Okay, we will ask MANCOM to look at the possibility, but I think given the short notice, it's going to be difficult. But let MANCOM look at the possibilities. Please, when you submit names of experts you want to include, want us to consider, make sure that, of course, these experts that you're proposing comes from different perspectives. Honorable McPherson.
Thanks, Chair. I really want to support the proposal by Dr. Tswaku to have this in person. I really feel that, you know, when we meet in person and we have presentations in person, I think it is way more fulfilling than doing so online. We get distracted by things at home, so on and so forth. So I would rather delay it somewhat if that means being able to meet in person. Thanks.
Thank you very much. Any other inputs? We will definitely take this to MANCOM, your inputs of the two members who have spoken. There being no further hands, we will then take this matter to MANCOM and report back. We'll just keep the committee updated. Did you want to speak again, Honorable McPherson?
Chair, just on another committee item possibly, but I'll wait for your direction. Thanks.
Okay. Is it an additional matter?
I don't have the agenda in front of me, so I'm not too sure what else is on the committee agenda.
Okay. Can we have the agenda? I think under committee business, I was going to allow Honorable Dr. Tswaku to raise a matter for the last time. Otherwise, we want him to we want members to submit to the committee prior so that we can manage the meeting. Right. Now, this is the last item. So can I give Dr. Swaku and then Honorable McPherson.
No, thank you very much, Chair. I think maybe, Chair, this maybe this we should probably at some point sometimes have a committee meeting without maybe a business of the department, so that maybe we can align on certain issues, maybe when we submit something. And now I know that if I need to raise a point, or maybe I need to raise a matter that would have to be discussed by a committee, you know, we can get those opportunities maybe to speak amongst ourselves, because we're always having those meetings. So now, say, Chair, I wanted to say that there are a lot of actions that I think since I've joined this committee, that they said that they're going to be done, or maybe replies from departments and all the kind of stuff like that. I wanted to check, where do we record all these things? Because I even now asked questions which were related to the Invest SA, but not directly into the presentation, the opening, whatever. So I wanted to check where we even said last time, we suggested that we must have a resolution tracker of all items, because so that we know where we are going, and maybe when we request things to department, and you know, we need to know where we are. For example, I asked for the pledged things, you know, jobs way back. I never got any response from the department. So I wanted to check, Chair, because normally in a meeting, you'll have what is called matters arising. We start with what we agreed on in the previous meetings and check if those actions have been done, so that we are able to follow them. So I wanted to check with you, Chair, where do we track resolutions? When are we going to have time to get maybe a response, or maybe to formally look at resolutions, and so that we can sail, we can see if we're moving forward and we're moving, you know, backwards. And I think one of the other thing was to say that also it will help us to, you know, to know, maybe also to be able to propose, maybe to see other, you know, the department we have not seen yet, other entities, you know. So I wanted to really get that, and trying to navigate, and also maybe to suggest that we should probably have just a committee meeting to look at our staff and you know, to look, and because back in the, I think the ones I used to attend in the province, maybe it's different in national, you'll have those sessions, strategy sessions, you'll have committee meetings on committee business as you have now done, which is we welcome the workshops. And also maybe it will be the time where we actually have to ask in terms of the other issues, how to raise questions and what are things like that. So it's one of those things, when I chair, I wanted just to get the clarity on. Thank you. But I hope you saw my question.
Yes. No, I hear your point. And I think it is something that can be prepared. The committee unit can prepare for us, I think, the action tracker, and then also list for us all the entities under DTIC, and when we last met with them as a portfolio committee, so that we have a picture, and then so that we can then decide how we're going to bring when we are going to bring entities that we haven't seen for a long time to the committee, and then come with proposals as Mancom. Can I then take Honorable McPherson?
Sorry, Member Dean. On the issue for the, you know, the resolution tracker.
You have muted yourself.
Oh no, I wanted to check, Chair. There was a question also on the resolution tracker, on the decisions where we have taken. When are we going to, do we have those, and when do you think that every meeting we should attach them and look and check how far are we, if all what we've asked for we've received from departments or any actions taken from the committee.
Okay. Yeah. No, no, that's fine. We'll take it to MANCOM and see how we can work it into our agenda. It might not need to be in the actual meeting. It can be something that is circulated and that members can comment on. Mr. McPherson? Oh, sorry, Honorable McPherson.
Thanks. You can call me even Dean if you'd like. Something that we've discussed previously is the idea of a study tour. I just want to find out if that's still on the radar, because, you know, as time goes by for this year, we then, you know, move into next year, and just, you know, previous sort of history is that when you move into the year before an election year, these things start to become a bit tight and difficult. You know, and obviously some of us like to try and manage our diaries quite far in advance. So I just wanted to see, is that still on the cards, or is that something that's been removed? Thanks.
Okay, no, that's fine. We also take that to MANCOM and ask for an update on that. I know some work was done on a proposal. I'm not sure whether it was submitted. So let me report back to the meeting on that one after we've had a MANCOM meeting. With no other business to attend to, thank you very much, members, for the robust discussion, and we have lots of work going forward. Thank you very much. We'll just ask the committee secretary to be out on the future meeting, the next meeting, sorry.
Chairperson, the next meeting is tomorrow, where the committee will get a briefing from the IBC, NAF and DTIC on funding application and adjudication processes, as well as on aftercare services. That will be the focus for tomorrow's meeting.
Thank you very much. Honorable Dr. Swako, we expect the same level of preparation for tomorrow's meeting. Thank you very much.
You'll get it.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye, Chair.